Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Dan Bernstein Show on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Playoffs, to me, have been a sign of how elite some of these teams are, and you know, the distance between the Bulls and some of those teams. I thought that the Bulls, look, they were an incredibly fun team to watch, and I think when whole, I agree with this managerial regime that this team has a lot of potential, but they also have a long way to go.
That's Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago, a frequent guest on the show and on these airwaves talking about the Bulls. And draft night matters because not only do you have the pick, but there's a lot of movement and there's a lot of opportunity, and teams get excited and they get antsy. And sometimes general managers look at that as the opportunity to make and take a big step. We'll see if the Bulls choose to do that as we get closer to a week from tonight is the NBA draft. And here to talk about that with us is Ricky O'Donnell. And you can find Ricky on Twitter and read his work at @SBN_Ricky. He's the editor and NBA draft writer at SB Nation, part of the Cash Considerations podcast. And he joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Ricky, what's happening, man?
What's going on, Dan?
Well, we're a week out, and I guess I hadn't really thought about that fact. It means something to me that at least the way I'm sort of set up to passively receive information in the way of, you know, curated my timeline, I'm getting more chatter about the Bulls moving the pick than using the pick. On balance, what do you think is going to happen in that binary?
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I think it would be a smart move for the Bulls to move the pick if they can. There will probably be some good options at number 18 overall if the Bulls do use the pick, but I don't think that the Bulls are that far away from making a meaningful push up the Eastern Conference if they can stay healthy. So if you can add a veteran, particularly in the front court, I think that would be a great move for the Bulls. The Bulls need size and they need shooting. And when you got a team led by DeMar DeRozan, you're going to be ready to win right now, not 4 or 5 years from now. So if the Bulls want to look at some trade candidates, I think the ideal guy to go after would be Kyle Kuzma on the Washington Wizards. I don't know if Washington would be tempted by a package of Kobe White and number 18 overall, let's say, but I think that would be a potential good guy to go after. His teammate, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, could be another solid wing defender the Bulls could add to shore up the rotation, give him some more shooting. The Bulls were 30th in three-point rate this past season. The percentage of shots they took from three-point range was the lowest in the league. So I think they need to add some shooting. They need to add some size, whether that's in the draft or via a trade. That should be their main objective.
I like the Kuzma name there. I just wonder about health, that the last thing they need is another guy who's going to play 50 games for them.
Yeah, I totally feel that. Kuzma played 66 games last year.
Oh,
so the Bulls,
wow,
would have been one of the healthiest guys on the team. And he's going to turn 27 this offseason. So, you know, he's someone who I think is entering the prime of his career. He's always been a little bit underrated as a defender, where he's pretty good. The Lakers fell off a cliff once they got rid of him and KCP and Caruso, obviously. And he would, you know, be another willing shooter in the front court. So, you know, Kuzma and KCP are two names I would identify as potential trade candidates for the Bulls, but they're going to have a lot of options. And we know that Karnišovas is a very resourceful and creative GM.
I like the way you structured your mock draft because of some of the psychology in here. As with each team, you presented most likely pick and best pick. And you said it's what we think every team is going to do and what they should do. So I'm interested in the difference in between those things. What do we presume that you know that a team doesn't?
Oh, well, I think all the teams are much smarter than me, but I still feel obligated to give my opinion. So I think it's shaping up the draft at the top of it to go Jabari Smith, number one overall to the Magic, Chet Holmgren, number two to the Thunder, and Paolo Banchero, number three to the Rockets. But as I've been evaluating this draft class since the start of the cycle, Banchero has been my top player all along. I wrote a story on why I thought he was the best pick for the Magic. So when doing the draft, I thought that, or when doing the mock draft, I thought it would be useful to say, you know, just sort of how I viewed each of these prospects relative to, you know, my own big board. Because when you talk about something like the draft, it's not just going to be like big differences in evaluations from team to team. Like even within one front office, there's going to be a lot of disagreement. So this draft class is fun to me because there's four legitimate tier one prospects with Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, and Jaden Ivey. And really, like, it's in the eye of the beholder who you think is the best prospect in the draft. So that's made this a fun cycle to cover. I've been a Banchero guy. I think that, you know, that should be the move for the Magic, but it looks like it's going to be Jabari Smith. So that's just one thing to watch during draft night.
You have the Knicks at 11. You describe the best pick for them being Tari Eason. And then there's a seven-spot drop where you have the Bulls most likely taking Tari Eason. I want to talk about him first before we get to the guy you describe as the Bulls' best pick. What is Tari Eason?
Yeah, Tari Eason's awesome in my opinion. It seems like, you know, the NBA isn't quite as high on him as some people, at least what's been reported to this point. I guess the sales pitch on Tari Eason is he has great physical tools, first and foremost. 6'8", 220 pounds, 7'2 wingspan, hands as big as Kawhi Leonard. He has a blazing first step and can just get to the basket whenever he wants to. Was a transfer from Cincinnati to LSU this year. Came off the bench the entire year for LSU, but was easily their best player, led the team in scoring, and was just a monster defensively. I mean, this guy rips the ball away from opponents in terms of blocks and steals. I think his most NBA-ready skill right now is going to be his switchability defensively. If you've been watching the NBA playoffs and the finals, you know that you need switchable defenders in the league. And Tari Eason, to me, is a guy who could definitely like blitz or trap a ball handler far from the basket on the perimeter or hold up well at the rim because he's a strong, long defender. He's just such a ferocious, high-motor player in general that I think that his boost of athleticism and just physical tools would both give him like some immediate utility on the Bulls and some upside if he can improve some of his shortcomings. Now, those shortcomings, first and foremost, his jump shot. He hit 36% of his threes, which is pretty good this year, 80% of his free throws, which is great, but just not a really confident shooter. Reminds me a little bit of Patrick Williams as a shooter, where he's just like hesitant to shoot it and a slow shooter, but it'll go in if he's open enough. And then the other thing is Tari Eason is very right-hand dominant. He doesn't use his offhand, his left very much. But, you know, this guy gets to the basket whenever he wants, had the highest free throw rate of any major prospect in this draft. Defenders couldn't help but foul him. And he knocks down his free throws. So I really like Eason. I think he'd give the Bulls some upside as well as a really versatile defender with some shooting potential. I just don't know if he's going to make it to 18.
See, your answer is forcing me to jump ahead in my notes, Ricky. Because this is an unfair question, but I love asking it before a draft, this kind of question. If Patrick Williams, current Patrick Williams, were in this draft, I don't mean college Patrick, I mean what everything we know about him, everything he's already done and not done in the NBA, if Patrick Williams were all of a sudden made draftable, where would he go in this draft?
Yeah, that's a really hard question to answer because Patrick Williams played like six games last year. He missed the entire second season of his career with a wrist injury. So it's tough to say. I think Pat would still be one of these guys who would be drafted as like a toolsy wing. And I think he would be a lottery pick for sure. I don't think he'd be in the top 4, but I think you could make a case for like top 8 in this draft. So, you know, it's just tough because he hasn't really played and he's still so young. So Patrick Williams remains a big question mark and a mystery really coming into his third pro season.
Yeah, that hurts a little bit because he was what? He was 4th? You know, when it was all on potential. And if he's already not that a couple of years into his NBA career, that's interesting. You know, that's why I like to ask that, because it's telling. You have the Bulls picking E.J. Liddell as their best pick. We heard from Casey Johnson coming out in the rejoin, and I believe that Casey on the Mully and Haw show said that is a name that he has been hearing that is within this cloud that the Bulls are looking at if, in fact, they exercise the pick. What kind of player is he?
Yeah, people in the state should know who he is, because E.J. Liddell is a 2-time Illinois state champion coming out of Belleville, Illinois, downstate. He's just been a really good player basically since he was a sophomore or junior in high school. He's been on the map, top 40 recruit entering Ohio State. And as a sophomore, he became one of the best players in the Big Ten and really one of the best players in college basketball. Entered the draft, went back to school for his junior year, and he really improved in a lot of meaningful ways in terms of his translation to the NBA. So, you know, as someone who's known E.J. Liddell since he was in high school or has been following his career, I never thought he was really fit for the modern NBA, because he just feels like a 90s throwback power forward to me. 6'7", 240 pounds, does a lot of interior scoring, great touch inside the arc, and really good defensive player. But I just wondered, like, oh, is this the type of player the modern game has sort of weeded out? But I think you got to credit E.J. Liddell for going back to school and improving as a shooter. He became a 37.5% shooter, 77% from the foul line this year. Just really became a more accurate and more willing spot-up shooter. And now I would say that's probably one of the strengths of his game. Defensively is where he's always been really good. Like, when you think about, you know, a shorter, more stout and strong power forward, those guys typically don't soar above the rim. But E.J. Liddell's got springs in his legs, man. He was a tremendous shot blocker, both at the high school and college level. I think he had like a 39-inch vertical jump at the combine. So he could really get off the ground. And I think, like, a couple things. One, the Bulls hit on Ayo Dosunmu last year as a guy who was a superstar at the college level, but had the traits to transition into a role player in the NBA. I think Liddell has some of the same appeal where, you know, you could see him as like your 4th or 5th best starter potentially, whereas, you know, in college, everything was running through him. And then in terms of like a comparison, like look at the success of Grant Williams for the Celtics this year. Grant Williams, 2-time SEC player of the year at Tennessee. He was a superstar in college, who's also like a 6'6", 240-pound power forward who couldn't shoot. He really improved as a shooter in the NBA. He hit 7 threes in the Eastern Conference Finals to, you know, keep the Celtics alive. I think Liddell has a lot of similar strengths as Grant Williams. He's further along in his shooting projection to this point in his career. And Grant Williams can't jump, and E.J. Liddell can really soar above the rim. So I like him. To me, he would be like a safe pick, maybe not the highest upside. But like, if you're just looking to shore up the rotation, let's say in the 6, 7, or 8 spot for the Bulls, I think Liddell plays both ends of the floor, plays hard, smart player, talented. He would be like potentially a really solid contributor for them in the short term.
You know what he is to me, Ricky? And I think you mentioned like a throwback 90s player. It's funny. When I look at his measurables, his skill set, the fact that he is this, you know, like a big college safe guy, major program, he's a Jerry Krause pick. E.J. Liddell he's a classic, like an archetype Jerry Krause pick. And I'm not saying necessarily good or bad, because Jerry had some good picks and some bad ones. This is the kind of player Jerry Krause would adore.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, he's got the length. We know that Krause always liked length. I think Liddell's a 7-foot wingspan guy. He's got some of the measurables. Tough to put your finger on what Jerry Krause was really thinking with some of these picks. He was going off straight tools, and it's some of the late first round picks, he was going for college vets. So I could definitely see that line of thinking. And, you know, whoever gets Liddell, he's going to be a solid player. I think other guys might have more upside, but he's a pretty safe bet to be a good pro. Good third big man, probably, is what you want to project him as.
Yeah, I would say if he's on the high end, Corliss Williamson, and on the low end, Byron Houston. if I'm going right back to the guys that I used to see. Now, there's another name that intrigues me for the modern NBA. When we start talking about, you know, and look, did you notice, Ricky, that when the NBA Finals games start on ABC, when they list the starters, they don't list positions? Just this is a, sort of an aside, but they, sure, it's not guard, guard, center, forward, forward. That we've come so far in the postmodern NBA that they literally don't have to tell you what position anybody plays to start a game.
Love it. Yeah, it's tough with the Celtics. They're all switchable as it is, so that makes sense.
Yeah, so we know that a position as defined is rim runner, rim protector, lob catcher. With, sure, that in mind, do you like Duke's Mark Williams?
Yeah, I like Mark Williams. Mark Williams probably won't be there for the Bulls at 18, but if he was, I think he'd be a pretty interesting selection. Now, typically, like, if I'm drafting a big man in the first round, I want a guy who can be a plus passer or a plus shooter. Mark Williams is not either of those things. Mark Williams is a classic, like you said, rim protector and lob catcher. You know, he doesn't have great defensive versatility. He's going to play in a drop. It's going to drive Kendall Gill insane when they're calling the games on NBC Sports Chicago. But he's good in drop because he has a 7'7 or 7'8 wingspan. He's a good athlete.
And good feet, too. He really does have good feet.
Yeah. He has quick feet on the perimeter. Like, do I want Mark Williams switching onto a guard in the NBA level? I don't know if I'd go that far. To me, that guy is more Jalen Duren, the center from Memphis, who I think is phenomenal. I have him as the fifth overall player in this draft. I don't know if he'll be available for the Bulls either. But in terms of Mark Williams, he's very good at what he's good at, which is being huge, playing hard, and dunking everything and blocking shots at the rim. He doesn't have awesome versatility, but like the Bulls just need size. They need length. Like you could see him sort of transitioning into the Robert Williams role, I think, that he's playing for the Celtics right now.
Ooh, now you got my attention. You've got my attention.
But he's not the same passer as Robert Williams or quite as explosive as a leaper, but he's super long. He's definitely a safe player too, I would say. So Mark Williams would be a good pick for the Bulls if he's on the board at number 18.
He's also a really good free throw shooter. He's not much of a shooter. He's got a nice touch around the basket, but I think he's attempted like one college three-pointer.
Yeah.
Do you look at free throw percentage or even just a scout's eye stuff? Because I generally think if somebody is a good free throw shooter and a good enough athlete and a hard enough worker, I can extend your range a little bit. Like I can, if you put in the time, like you can be more guarded with somebody who would need to be guarded a couple steps back from where you currently are. Now your range could be extended if you are able to be a 75% free throw shooter, which he is.
Yeah, I think for sure for most players that's the case. It's hard for me to project Mark Williams as an NBA level 3-point shooter when he didn't even take any in college. Like I think that free throw percentage super important. If it's like a guard or a forward, I always look at floater percentage because I feel like your floater sort of shows where your touch is at. If you got really good touch, that's kind of the most important thing in terms of extending your range. And then just like willingness to shoot threes, even if they don't go in at the college level, I think is another big indicator. But in today's league, it does seem like teams can usually get a player to shoot at least a decent level as long as they have a certain baseline of touch. So I think that's dead on, and you know, most teams are going to approach this draft with a mindset of, well, we can probably teach this guy how to shoot.
Who in this draft are you way higher on than anybody else? Unapologetically, everyone else is wrong. Everyone else is underrating this guy.
Great question. I would say, you know, no one has Banchero one, and I do. So that's probably the easiest one because I just think
that's too easy. That's too easy. I won't let you off that easy.
Okay, well then I'm going to say Duren. Duren, Michael, late lottery. I think he's the fifth best player in the class. Youngest American player in the class out of Memphis. 6'10 power forward, 7'5 wingspan. Absolutely extreme athlete, just a total man-child in terms of his frame. I think he's very covered versatile defensively, which is why I like him. I think you can play him at the level of the screen. You can play him in drop. You can switch out onto guards and contain him on the perimeter. So I love Jalen Duren. I don't understand why he's not going to go in the top 10. It seems like Mark Williams could go ahead of him. And I like Mark Williams, but to me, Darren just has so much upside as a guy who is so powerful as a player around the rim, but still pretty light on his feet. So I like his short roll passing upside. I think he could have some untapped potential as a mid-range scorer, too. I really like Jalen Duren. I think he's a top five pick.
I can't believe I'm asking this, but I know I have to. Does Kofi Coburn get drafted?
No, I'm going to say no. And that's okay. Kofi Coburn's still going to make a ton of money playing basketball in his life. He'll probably play some NBA games eventually, and he's going to have every opportunity to prove he's an NBA player, if that's in summer league, if it's, you know, in the G League International. But in terms of his game, I don't think that it's really what the NBA is looking for today in a big man.
Agreed. And lastly, back to a point you made about the Bulls, saying that they, with health and some proper management of their roster and some improvements, you said make a push up the Eastern Conference. How do you define that? What would constitute a successful next step? Is it making the conference finals with this DeRozan, quote-unquote, led team?
Yeah, I would say win a series or win two series would probably be the logical next step. And, you know, on February 1st, the Bulls were in first place in the Eastern Conference. The Celtics were in ninth. They were like a 500 team for the majority of the season. And then the Celtics really turned it on defensively. The Bulls obviously had a bunch of injury problems. But, I mean, reasonable minds can disagree on this point. But to me, like, watching the finals, I just think the league is so wide open right now. Like, back when, you know, a few years ago when Durant was on the Warriors, when LeBron was running the East with the Cavs, it was like, okay, we could just sit in the season. We know it's going to be a Cavs-Warriors finals. No one else is even close to these two teams. I think if you restarted the playoffs today, you could get a totally different finals matchup. I think the Celtics and Warriors are really good, but the Warriors are past their prime. The Celtics, their offense just gets stuck in the mud too often. They don't have really high-level passers for all their strength. So to me, like, there's just a big opportunity to try to win the title league-wide. And if you're like a top three or top four team in the conference, you might as well go for it. And I think, you know, the Bulls might be close. They need a lot of things to go right for them. But it's at least a, you know, a more exciting time, I think, to view the league-wide than it was when the Warriors were running everything with Durant.
This is really good stuff, Ricky. Appreciate it much, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
That is Ricky O'Donnell. That is of SB Nation, who covers the Bulls and the NBA draft for them. Remember we asked the question before when we were talking about the whole unfortunate Byron Pringle stuff yesterday of how he was handling things and say never necessarily take a police report at face value. And I always say, what don't I know about this? And what else should we know about this? I want to ask that question of some news regarding some news we got from the White Sox as well when we come back on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein.
Hey, Bernstein.
Middays on 670 The Score.
0-1. On the ground, third base side.
Yoan Moncada has the final out of a big 13 for the White Sox in shutout fashion over the Tigers. The Sox have swept Detroit, and a great day for Yoan Moncada.
Yeah, we got to see a Clemens pitch. Is it Cody or Kobe Clemens? One of the K-name kids they've got. God, I hate that. I cannot tell you how much that just grosses me out. They're saying, I'm a strikeout pitcher, so I'm going to give my kids names to start with K. So you remember, I struck a lot of people out. Screw you.
Better That's or worse than George with George Foreman?
Naming all the kids George?
Yes, I almost respect that more because he's leaning into it.
Yeah, I guess, but that's at least like it's not so stupid. It's like, I strike people out. It would be like George Foreman like giving everybody names to start with KO because he knocks everybody out. I mean, just I think the level of cheesy vainglory in that, it's like, that's your kid's name. That's a human being. That's their name. And you're using it to market your legacy as a baseball player. It's I hate it, hate it, hate it. It is so reflective. Like, what kind of person is like, yeah, I threw a lot of strikeouts, and the sign for a strikeout is K, and I'm going to give my kids K names because I was good at striking people out. You don't like it? Grab a bat. I mean, it's just awful.
Is that like if like Kevin Youkilis had to have his kid's name with a double B in there?
I mean, really, just the aforethought. It's one thing, maybe one kid. You have one kid, and you're like, all right, well, hey, this is... But all of his kids, all of his, like, here's another one. I'm still not over it. I love how many strikeouts I have. Here's another cake. And not to mention the other aspect of that I'm sure he's too dumb to even think about, is when you start putting a lot of Ks together, like you get a lot of Ks in a row, it starts to get a little weird. And uncomfortable. That when, and if you actually look at the history of some of those K's that are strung together and the words that they decided to start with,
I just think it's like one of those, as a parent, you're coming from a rich bloodline of athletes. What if the son or daughter doesn't want to play sports? What if they're into other things? You know what I mean?
Even so, it's just like your kid.
What if they're a hitter?
And his swing isn't any good either. I mean, he's not very good, and I'm sure the pressure is just enormous on that poor kid. And believe me, the minor leagues are just littered with all kinds of sons and brothers and names of people who, and maybe he loves baseball, and maybe he is gonna be just happy to be in the major leagues, and that's great. And I don't want to presume, but that idea of like, oh, my kids are gonna have K names, that struck people out. I'm Roger Clemens. Screw you. I mean, I don't know. Sorry. That's neither here nor there.
Tell me how you really feel.
No, it's just it's just so lame. It's so lame. It's your kid's name. I always say never name your kids after athletes in general, because they'll always find out that somebody's having sex with a horse or something, you know, or you're robbing a bank. Like it never ends well. I love this athlete. I'm going to name my kid after this athlete. Your kid doesn't know anything about that. That's another human being with another sentient existence on our planet. And you just sort of burden them. Like, I named you after Kobe Bryant because he was awesome at basketball.
Yeah, well, I like poetry, so.
Okay. Well, I mean, don't name him after T.S. Eliot, because right. You know, things get a little ugly in that too. Whatever it is, I don't know. It's just the name of another human being is not a little toy to help, you know, make you feel better about yourself and brand yourself in that regard. I guess I don't know. Here endeth the lesson. And also, before we get to this Liam Hendricks stuff, I want to share this just because it's awesome. We were talking about Danny Mendick, and we were talking about what happens when you're a winning team. You always have to get outlier seasons from randos. And if Danny Mendick is having that season, you better make something of it. If all of a sudden he's just deciding he's going to be good. This is a quick little game here. I'm going to give you pitcher A and pitcher B. Pitcher A, this is a Stonecutter has this. I think he said this years ago. Pitcher A pitched 186 and two-thirds innings, had a 2.22 ERA, a 1.04 whip, and an ERA plus of 210. That's like WRC plus. So that's more than twice as good as the average pitcher. Okay, that's pitcher A. Pitcher B, 187 innings, posted a 1.99 ERA, a 1.01 whip, and a 2.12 ERA plus. Pitcher A is 2003 Pedro Martinez, one of the best seasons ever. Pitcher B, the combined stats of Cliff Polite, Neil Kotz, and Dustin Hermanson in 2005.
Think about that.
Cliff Polite, Dustin Hermanson, and Neil Kotz in 2005 aggregately were 2003 Pedro.
More like Cliff Polite, am I right?
That is insane. That is insane. Oh, and now news yesterday, at least for me, and maybe you knew this, I sure didn't. I'm just going to give you what Liam Hendricks said about his forearm stiffness.
I've had a tear in my UCL since 08. That's been there. That's been manageable. I've been able to deal with it. But over the course of this year, my elbow has been constantly inflamed a little bit more than usual. And we had just got to the point where it was inflamed. It was getting a little uncertain. There's a slight forearm strain in there, so we're taking care of that. But the ligament hasn't changed. Nothing's changed on any other end of that way. So it's the mild strain, and hopefully get back out there, and they say 3 weeks, and I'm targeting July 1st.
Okay, well, that's sort of a breezy way to dismiss the fact. If you missed it, he says he's had a tear in his UCL, the ulnar collateral ligament, since 2008. Okay. And I mentioned, just as we asked with the Byron Pringle situation, what more do we need to know about this that we don't? What else should we know? And I think it would probably take an orthopedic surgeon to say, yeah, some UCL tears just kind of stay there and never get worse. Did they know when they signed him that he had a tear in his ulnar collateral ligament? That was 30 seconds. It might have been a little difficult to understand with his Perth accent there, but listen to this again. This is Liam Hendricks saying he has a partially torn UCL.
I've had a tear in my UCL since 08. That's been there. That's been manageable. I've been able to deal with it. But over the course of this year, my elbow has been constantly inflamed a little bit more than usual. And we had just got to the point where it was inflamed. It was getting a little uncertain. There's a slight forearm strain in there, so we're taking care of that. But the ligament hasn't changed. Nothing's changed on any other end of that way. So it's the mild strain, and hopefully get back out there. And they say 3 weeks, and I'm targeting July 1st.
Okay. Now we know that, I guess. Thanks for letting us know. So there's that.
My reaction to that, Dan, is I'm almost positive, like, I don't know because I'm not in the room, but I'm almost positive the White Sox were aware of the medicals when they signed Liam Hendricks and understood that that may become an issue. But it hadn't been an issue across his career. However, as we continue to move down the line here, he's getting older, more stress, obviously, high leverage innings late. How much of an issue will that become? That's what I'm worried about, because you talked about the forearm strain. That's something that puts an incredible amount of stress on your elbow. But if there's a slightly torn UCL in your pitching arm, that is something that has to be monitored. And if it's significant, then we may see some of the really significant after effects of what this hadn't been bothering him in the past.
I guess. I just didn't think we'd learn that today. I didn't think I'd start doing show prep. Like, oh, Liam Hendricks has had a torn UCL for the last 14 years.
Well, right, because he downplayed the significance of it. Now it may be significant is what I'm saying. I'm worried that it could be.
At some age, that thing that you had that was no big deal becomes a big deal. And that goes for all of us, whatever it may be. Whatever something like that, when your job is to throw a baseball, and that's one of maybe the most important ligament involved in doing it, and the fact that it's partially torn and hasn't healed. I thought those things healed over 14 years. I really did. I thought sometimes they say we can avoid surgery and we do, you know, platelet-rich plasma injections or whatever it is, and stem cells and these things heal. Okay.
Yeah, I think the only way in this case the UCL can be healed is if it's surgically repaired. I don't think it...
Replaced.
Usually
what it is. Absolutely. Is you find a ligament from somewhere else and you tie that thing on, and it's one of the most perfunctory, easy surgeries that is done in sports. But I think if he were going to have it done, he probably would have done it 14 years ago, and he didn't. So I'll just sort of present that, and now we know that, and there's that. We have a story coming up for the Midday Midway with which I need to be extremely careful. It's a guy caught a fish, and it was a big fish, and there was something in the fish that has never been, as far as I know, in a fish before. Help me out with this one, and good luck to all of us. You don't want to miss this. It's on the Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score.
Oh, good luck to me on this one. It is time for the Midday Midway here on this Thursday, and been a good show so far. Started out talking a little bit about what's going on in baseball right now, about what it means to have to beat the bad teams and really get fat on the bad teams, because right now, pre-deadline, we're already seeing the extremes of haves and have-nots in baseball. The White Sox, if they're going to be a have, they got to start beating all these have-nots, and the Cubs are just getting kicked in the teeth right and left and are learning that they certainly are a have-not right now. Jim DeShays is going to join us in just a couple. He's really going to love following this segment, by the way, and he's going to join us to talk about some of that stuff. And Ricky O'Donnell was really good. Lots of information, lots of really specific scouting stuff about the NBA draft and the Bulls and some of the possible names for them, as the draft is already a week from tonight. So it's something we're going to do a lot more of next week, is getting ready for some of this. But if you may want to listen back to it for that 10 to 10, 20 or so, some really solid scouting information on some of the names that are involved. And then we found out that Liam Hendricks has a torn ulnar collateral ligament, but it's no big deal. It's a mere flesh wound, because he has had it for a while, and he'll just be fine, just because he'll be fine. Back when we used to take an annual fishing trip up to Canada, every once in a while we still go, but one of my jobs that I loved ever since I was a kid, every day at shore lunch, when we pull the boats over and we've got all the walleye that we're going to eat, that we... My job, I would cut open the stomachs of the fish, and it serves a purpose. You say, well, why the hell are you doing that? Well, you do that to find out what they're eating, and you never knew what you'd find, because you would find out, hey, if you cut open a walleye's stomach and they're eating a lot of minnows, and they say, okay, well, maybe we're going to use lures that look like minnows. This is what they're eating at the moment because of conditions. Sometimes it's crayfish. Very often you'd cut open a northern pike, and inside a big distended stomach would be another northern pike facing the opposite direction, because they tend to cannibalize, and that would maybe inform lure selection. But it's always eye-opening. Oh boy, this is from Huffington Post. Richard Kesar of Shelbyville, Indiana, took his friend John Hoop fishing on the Ohio River last week. The goal was for Hoop to land his first blue catfish. Well, he did. And he said, we noticed when we got it in the boat that its stomach was huge. At first, he assumed, and rightly so with catfish, it was because of eggs, or maybe some wildlife the fish had eaten. Catfish are they're almost like sharks in that these big old catfish who are scavenging around the bottom for whatever they can find. He said it's common to find other fish, sometimes turtles, muskrats, and other animals. It wasn't until later that day that he pressed down on the catfish's abdomen and felt two hard objects that he knew couldn't be eggs. And let me tell you now that blue catfish get enormous. I don't know exactly how big, but I know people catch them down in the Braidwood Cooling Lake in Illinois. And I want to say it's blues and flatheads, 50 pounds, 60 pounds. These are large animals. So they returned to Kesar's home, and they cut open the catfish, and they discovered what was bulking up the tummy, a foam ball, part of another fish, and what they simply called the other object. Rick, are we tweeting this story?
If there wasn't the large picture of said object...
But
I definitely would.
Well,
the said object is an anatomically correct body, multiple body parts. It's the whole Megillah here. It's all of it, and it's slightly upturned, and it's got every single possible vein distended, and everything that's hanging beneath it, and it's attached to a suction cup. So this one is made to be stuck to the wall, the ceiling.
I assume there's some versatility there.
Yes, this can be used in a switching defense. I guess it's got right. It's a positional versatility. The best part of it is the way they have it laid out, just removed from the catfish's stomach. It still has a maple seed, like the helicopter maple seed, kind of stuck to the sack. But oh my God, how did that get to the bottom of the Ohio River? Like, who's like, well, I'm done with this one. Or they were actually like using it in a boat and it slipped and fell out, or by the side of the river. There's a backstory here.
It could be the anchor,
right? I mean, there's a backstory here, but the catfish thought dinner, and even like the whole thing. It's almost. I don't know if this is an actual like heavy latex cast of one. And if it is, congratulations to whoever the model is for this. But
or I'm sorry.
Or I apologize. But so he said when we took it out of the fish, he said, John and my wife and I started laughing. My wife immediately covered my daughter's eyes and turned her away from it. Well, there's no unseeing that. I'm sorry. That's good luck living up to that for the rest of one's life, whatever it is. The daughter keeps asking what it is. Answer honestly, or it's going to come back to bite you. I don't mean this thing will come back to bite you, or the fish will come back to bite you. But in this regard, I think your hand has been forced, and you'd better answer honestly. Oh, my God. That is... that.
Yeah.
If you're going to pull something out of a catfish and it's going to be one of those, I will say that the one that Terry and I put in George Offman's travel bag.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Do you remember that one?
I remember the story.
That was like the first month of the Boers and Bernstein show. That was 1999, and George was ready to go on a road trip with some team and left his bag in the hallway, and we sent the intern down to the sex shop on like Cicero or whatever it was, and at the time gave him like $40.
By the way, said, now that's some people watching.
Oh, I bet. The old sex shop. And I said, look, go there and get the biggest, most aggressive one you could possibly find for whatever it costs. And it was like 6 pounds, this thing he brought back. And it was like just ebony black and about I don't know, 14 inches long, as big around as a can of White Claw. And we put it in George's bag, and we screwed up because it was too heavy. We missed the boat. But George said he found it before he got into the security line and threw it out. So somebody found something at the bottom of a garbage can. But I wanted to see what it looked like when George Offman pulled this thing out of his bag in the airport and was and somebody had to see him actually putting it in a garbage can. Maybe after over the years, that's the one that somehow was ended up in a landfill and got washed into the Ohio River. Although I don't think ours didn't have the old suction cup on it. But yeah. We're still on the air, so that's a good sign. We've made it through this edition of the Midday Midway, and now I'm sure that the Cubs marquee baseball analyst and Cubs analyst Jim DeShays couldn't be more proud to be joining us next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.